Okay, good evening. Welcome everyone to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion at courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 Repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett and I'm net control for today, March 31st, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is the designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our ultimate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness with particular emphasis on the COVID-19 pandemic. We have again a special guest tonight, Sheila Sund, MD, who will answer your questions about COVID-19. Previous discussions have been recorded on the WA7ABU groups.io page, and hopefully we'll get a recording of this. For those of you who want to pass on this event that we have on Tuesdays and I think Friday again, other people can stream this on the web browsers through WA7ABU.com. On the web page is a streaming audio player at the bottom that plays on just about all devices. Okay, so anyway, all amateur operators are welcome to participate in the COVID-19 discussion through this net. On this net, we go on the basis that there is no such thing as dumb question, as we do on all of our nets. But we do want to avoid getting into hearsay and political, you know, rants about various decisions that are being made by, you know, good or bad by people. So we'll just try to stay away from that as we do with typically on repeater discussions. We'll try to base these questions and answers that you have will be as factual as possible. And, you know, Dr. Sund here spends a lot of time studying the actual data. So when you have questions, she goes and looks them up and looks at the actual papers when people make claims to try to help you understand what's really going on here. She also is serving as an advisor for Salem Health and Marion County Medical, Pope Medical Society, and trying to help our community out here to be better prepared for this COVID pandemic. I'm only going to do a brief sort of check-in period, about 10 minutes here of check-ins, and then I'm going to go right to the questions so we have plenty of time to answer questions. I know people have a lot of questions. We'll try to, you know, make sure that people get at least one shot at a question. Sometimes people have a question and then a follow-up and a follow-up, you know, and we'll try to get to you, but just be sensitive. Other people might want to ask a question as well, so I'll try to moderate as best I can. So let's start with anybody that wants to check in for the emergency preparedness net that might be on Echolink. Are there any Echolink users tonight? Come now, please. Okay, hearing no one there. Let's have general check-ins for the emergency preparedness net.
Hi, Brett. This is W0EDF, Whiskey Zero Echo Delta Foxtrot, Richard and Tiger.
Oh, that was a mess. K6 Sierra Tango X-ray, and I do have some questions.
W7 CCM.
We need a drop. Kilo 1, Victor, India, November. Everybody's quick king. Make sure to wait for the drop. I do have a question, Brett. A very simple, quick question. So just real fast, just a yes or no question. K1 VIN.
K7 AOZ.
W7 IVN.
Holy my listening.
Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie, no questions.
Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
K7, Juliet, Charlie, Delta.
Kilo Whiskey 7 Sierra, Steve Dayton, no questions.
W1 Alpha Romeo Kilo Robert, and a very short question.
Okay, let's just pause here for just a second. Let me go ahead and got a couple new check-ins here that I need to look up, unless you guys bear with me here for just a moment. Okay, I think I got that one. Okay, so we have Whiskey 1, Alpha Romeo Kilo. Robert has a question. Kilo Whiskey 7 Sierra, which I think is Stephen. And Dayton, is that correct, Stephen?
Roger, roger.
Okay, very good. Welcome. You're new to Minet. Thank you for checking in. Kilo 7 Juliet Charlie Delta is John. Kilo 7 Alfa Romeo Tango is Art. We had a double there with Whiskey 7 Mike Tango Lima. Got Craig there. Don't know if I miss you, you know, come back again. We had, Kilo 7 Alpha Oscar Zulu. That is Alan. Al, I should say. No, Al. I think it might be the first time you checked in, but yeah, you come up as Alan. I got to fix that. Kilo 1 Victor India November. Kevin, you got a question. I got you highlighted. Bruce, Whiskey 7 Charlie Mike. Dan, Kilo 6 Sierra Tango X-Ray. Any other questions? And Richard, Whiskey 0 Echo Delta Foxtrot started us off there. Okay, anybody else want to check in?
W7 November Alpha Tango, Nate.
November 0 November Oscar Fred Lafayette.
Kilo 5 Charlie Papa Charlie, no question.
Okay, there's another three. That's Mike, Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie, with no questions tonight. It's okay. You might think of one. There was Fred, November 0, November, Oscar. And Nate was in there, Whiskey 7, November, Alpha, Tango. Okay, we've got about 14 of us here. Anybody else want to check in?
Kilo, Foxtrot, 6, Foxtrot, Yankee, Delta, Richard.
Whiskey 7, India, Victor, November, Ivan.
November 7, India, Mike Echo. Jason.
Kilo, Bravo, 7, Foxtrot, Charlie, Hotel. Operator Charlie, here in Albany.
And that was Charlie, Kilo, Bravo, 7, Foxtrot, Charlie, Hotel. Jason, November 7, India, Mike, Echo. Ivan, Whiskey 7, India Victor November. Richard, Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta. And I think I'd already got Mike on the previous round. So, okay. So we'll do 2 more minutes of check-ins, and then we'll go on to your questions.
KI7FWH, Alan. KI7FWP, Jennifer, Salem.
KI7RWZ, Kilo India 7, Romeo Whiskey Zulu, Johnny.
Kilo Delta 7, Lima India Zulu, Tom.
Whiskey Alpha 7, Hotel Sierra Bravo, Gary and Silverton.
Okay, pause there for just a second. I got a couple new ones there that always slowed me down. So we got, Hotel CO Bravo. Come back. I got Kilo something, some 7. Can you say that one again, please?
Yes, Whiskey Alpha 7, Hotel Sierra Bravo.
Kilo Delta 7, Lima India Zulu.
Kilo India 7, Romeo Whiskey Zulu, Johnny in Gladstone.
yeah, I heard you guys. Let me just go back up through the list here. I got Kilo India 7, Romeo Whiskey Zulu, and you said that was Johnny. You're also new to my log. Let me get you in there. Let's see. Okay. And Kilo Delta 7, Lima, India, Zulu. That's new. Sorry, you're new. Hold on a second. Okay, that's Tom, looks like. If you give me your name, it speeds it up a little bit. And that's, we had Whiskey Alpha 7, Hotel Sierra Bravo, and I got to put you in there as well. And that looks like Jerry on the list there. So, okay. So I think that's probably enough to check-ins for now. It's 11 minutes after 7. And, again, this is the Emergency Preparedness Net with a special COVID-19 question-answer session with Sheila Sund, MD. So I'm going to let her do an introductory talk a little bit, tell you what the topic is for this evening, and then I've got a few people highlighted who have questions, and we'll go to them next. I got at least three people. Kevin just needs a yes-no answer. We'll probably start with him and then move Dan and then Robert. So hang around here, guys. Now, here's Sheila. Sheila Sund, MD.
Hello, everybody. I thought I'd start with kind of an Oregon update. I'm sure you read the newspapers, but I thought it would be helpful to tell you what I see when I look at the numbers. Basically, I'm seeing a fairly steady increase, and right now our doubling rate of the number of cases in Oregon is just under 6 days. That shows that the social distancing, it might be starting to kick in a little bit. We would normally expect a doubling about every 5 days. But we're going to have to wait still another week or two before we really know how much good we've done by all this staying at home. The biggest limitation with what's going on in Oregon is our testing is still extremely, extremely limited compared to most other states. We are really only testing people that are sick enough to be hospitalized, healthcare workers, and some high-risk people. There's a few other people that sneak in other ways, but that's the great majority of testing. So we're not doing any testing of the community at large or people with symptoms that are not getting either requiring hospital or being close to being in the hospital. The other number that I look at really closely is the hospital beds and how we're using hospital beds and ventilators, because that's what makes me get nervous. That tells me if we have to worry about medical surge. And I can say that our hospital bed usage is doubling about every 4 days, but so far our ventilator use is low. And I'm not quite certain why that is. It doesn't seem to be increasing as high. But the numbers for this are fairly recent. They weren't available before the end of last week, so I haven't been watching it long enough to have great ideas of how that's going to trend yet. And then a big thing which people may be seeing is that they have finally admitted that, yes, there is a lot of people out there that are asymptomatic and yet possibly infecting others. And most of us that have been watching this have thought that for a long time, but they haven't ever really admitted it before. But now they've done some testing, and like from some of the cruises, they've realized that on those cruises, 18 to 33% of the people on the cruises that tested positive never had a symptom. They've also done some testing of kids and found that about 13% of the kids out there in this group that they studied were positive, also without symptoms. So there's clearly a lot of people out there that are infected but don't have symptoms. We still don't know how much they're responsible for infecting everybody else, but probably at least part of the problem is all of that. And that leads me to masks, because we've talked a lot about masks here and what people should be using and homemade masks. And you'll see, I think, I can't remember who it was, CDC, somebody like that, or there's newspaper articles about how the CDC has said, yes, people should now wear masks. That's not quite true. There has been some discussion in the medical literature, but no research about whether people in America should wear masks more like people in Asia do. And there's some good arguments behind it, but again, it's not research. The rationale behind it is if you are sick, even if you don't have symptoms, if you're wearing a mask, you're probably not going to spread it as well. And so it wouldn't surprise me if we see more and more people wearing masks, but I would emphasize they have to be homemade masks because there is still an incredible shortage of real masks for healthcare workers. But if you see recommendations for wearing masks, really what they're saying is not that it keeps you from getting sick, but if all the sick people out there, even if they didn't know they were sick, were wearing masks, maybe it would slow down the spread.
Okay, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Let's see if there's any questions on, or maybe some of the ones that are on deck there. That maybe she addressed some of the questions that you had there. Any questions? Okay, so I'll tell you what, let's. That's all pretty straightforward there. So I want to go ahead and get through the people that I want to start with Kevin because he had a quick yes or no questions here. So let's get Kevin's question. K1 Beyond.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. So just a quick question for Sheila there. There's some homemade recipes for hand sanitizer that include what we'd consider rubbing alcohol, so isopropyl alcohol, and mixing it with aloe vera gel. And the recipe actually calls for a 70% isopropyl alcohol. Is that sufficient enough to kill this virus? And if it is, then I'll use it. K1VIN.
We don't really know for sure whether it's going to work or not. We know in the commercial ones it has to have at least 60% alcohol to be effective. So maybe the homemade ones would work. However, I would point out the most important message is that hand sanitizers are, if you're washing your hands a lot, hand sanitizers aren't really necessary. They don't do anywhere near as good as hand washing. So I highly recommend that if you don't have hand sanitizers, that you just wash more. If your hands have any grime or dirt or oils or anything on them, the bacteria or the viruses can hide in that, and when you do the hand sanitizer, it doesn't get them all, and it doesn't kill them. So hand washing is so much more effective than hand sanitizers.
Okay, let's see. Let's move on here to Dan, K6STX, who had a question.
Actually, I got a couple, but anyway, I'd like to start off with food again. We'd mentioned, dry food, and we've mentioned refrigerated food. We didn't go into freezer food. Will a virus stay on a frozen package just as well as any of the others?
Yeah, as far as we know, freezing doesn't kill the thing, unfortunately. Heat does. 147 degrees for 3 minutes will kill it. But so far, it looks like refrigerator and freezing is not adequate to completely kill the virus.
Okay. That leads me into another question then. If somebody was sick, or what you could say, asymptomatic, had the disease, if you just were in their presence, but you didn't touch them, does that just automatically say that you're going to wind up getting sick? Which leads me to the point where, should somebody sneeze or cough, and of course we want to keep this distance of 6 feet, and then say it goes out and whatever the germs they have and it drops to the ground. Once it hits the ground, does it die at the ground? Or if it's still alive for 24 hours when it's on the dirt or whatever it lands on.
Let me do that one first. Yeah, wherever it lands, whether it's the ground or your counter or your shopping cart or you name it, wherever it lands, it will be alive for 24 hours to 3 days, depending upon what the surface is. So, yeah, your shoes probably have it on it, and that's why my shoes never get to come in my house anymore. But most of us don't go around touching the ground, so I don't worry about it as much as I worry about the things that I commonly touch with my hands. As far as getting it from the... as far as getting it from somebody that you walk past, you really probably have to spend some time with them. It's not like this huge, dense cloud of virus particles. They just have they're just floating in the air around them. You know, most of them are within about 3 feet, and then there's a few others. And so it's just kind of, the longer you stay there, the greater the odds are that you will breathe one in. If they sneeze or cough in your face, though, then your odds go up much higher. Sneezing and coughing in somebody's face is actually a pretty good way to get them sick.
Okay, that leads me into my last question then, is if the virus is still alive and it's on the ground, and say we have, like we're having rains here, can that stuff get in the water?
Good question. All I can say is there's not been any evidence of anybody getting it from water. We have certain germs that we know are carried in water fairly easily, like cholera. So far, there has not been any evidence either with this COVID or with any of the other coronaviruses that is a way it's being transmitted, just like there really hasn't been any evidence that it's being transmitted in food.
Okie doke. Back to that. K6STX.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. You have the emergency preparedness net. We have Sheila on MD answering questions. So let's see. We had W1ARK had a question. Robert, you there?
Yes, part of my question was answered. Has there been a case of the virus obtaining it through fresh vegetables and fruit? Has there been any have been reported yet? Because there's a lot of fresh fruit out there I'd like to buy.
Again, people are looking for that pretty closely, and we haven't found any signs of it being, passed on from fruit that you would buy in the market at a farmer's store or anything like that. Can I say that there's not once in a blue moon? No, I can't. If you had somebody that you were sharing the house with and they were sick and breathing on your vegetables, I would worry about it more. But in general, there's just not that much virus out there to be causing a big problem with contaminating foods. It just, for some reason, it's either not happy there or the numbers are low because they're looking for that and they're not finding it.
Thank you. And will you address the fact that people are mixing hand sanitizers, the dregs of different bottles, mix them all together? I don't think it's a good idea, but how about you?
I definitely wouldn't do that because the alcohol concentration is the most important thing, and by the time you get into the dregs, you've probably had a lot of that alcohol evaporate, and I wouldn't feel confident that that is going to be effective anymore. But again, I really, really want to downplay sanitizers and upplay water, even to the point where when I go out, I have water in my car, and I will choose to pour some water on my hands, soap them up, pour some water on my hands in the parking lot to rinse them off and use paper towels. I would choose to do that over just using hand sanitizer when I left the store.
Okay, another thing we wanted to mention there is that as you're sort of looking around for hand sanitizer, there are hand sanitizers that are not effective at all. They're
ones that don't have alcohol, ones that say alcohol-free on them. Those are out there, and if you happen to use one of those, that's not going to work. The benzyl conium chloride ones aren't effective at all. So don't just pick up any bottle of hand sanitizer. But again, wash your hands, wash your hands. That's the most important thing. Okay, it's Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We have Sheila Sun, MD, answering your COVID-19 questions. Anybody else?
Well, I don't hear anybody chiming in, so I'm going to ask another question, K6STX.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan. She has some more she can report on, too. There won't be any crickets here. Go ahead.
Okay. Say you had a cardboard surface or a box or something that had this virus on it, whether it be in a store, whether a warehouse or whatever, and this particular box got stacked in a bunch of other boxes that were up side by side to this thing. Can this stuff transfer from box to box by itself?
Probably in very low amounts, unless there was something like damp or greasy on it. Your hands are very good for moving things around because, again, our hands always have a little bit of grease and grime on it. It's why they're not all dry and cracked all the time. So when you touch a surface and then you touch another surface, it sticks to your hand and you move it. But cardboard, there's nothing about one piece of cardboard that's going to pull it off another piece of cardboard. So I wouldn't really worry about that. Unless there's, again, like some transfer. If you have grease on one that soaks into the other, I might be a little more worried.
Okey-doke.
Sorry, I had a little bit of a double there. Thanks for the question there, Dan. Who else was in there?
WA7ABU.
Well, good evening, Dan. I'll get you checked in. Go ahead.
What do you recommend for use on the inside of your car? If you're going to consider the outside as dirty, once you enter your car and you've got your hands all cleaned, and what kind of material is effective in cleaning touchable spots inside the car?
Well, I have a good supply of disinfectant wipes because I've been ready for this since the 1st of February. So I use disinfectant wipes. They work really well. I have a little routine, or I did when I was driving my car. I'm not driving anywhere anymore. But I had a little routine where I would wash all the outside surfaces and handles, the little buttons that I push. Then I'd go inside and use my disinfectant wipe on all the inside door handles, the stereo, the steering wheel, all that. If you don't have that, any disinfectant, you know, if you can spray it on a cleaner with disinfectant that you spray on a rag would work. Or if you have bleach, a freshly made bleach solution will also work. It's a little harder if you've got nice leather or something like that, however, to want to use it on a fabric. And if all else fails and you don't have a disinfectant, just use a detergent that works, is safe for any of your surfaces, because detergent really does, like, hack the virus to pieces. It's kind of fun to imagine.
Okay. What is a detergent? You know, we all know it's something you wash the dishes with, something used as a cleaner, but how far away from bar soap can you get and still call it a detergent, WA7ABU?
Most things that are liquid hand soaps are fine. A liquid dish soap is probably even a little bit better. They all have enough detergent in it. If it makes a nice, good, you know, scrubbing bubble as opposed to just the foam that comes out of the thing, it probably would have enough detergent to work in it. Any bathroom cleaner, spray, any kind of cleaner that's advertised as a cleaner or a true soap is probably going to be enough to get rid of COVID. And so you can just wash it off the surfaces if you don't have any disinfectant.
Golf Delta Bravo. We had an email question that came in from Blaine. He was asking the question about how effective is ultraviolet light, and could you buy an ultraviolet light and do some disinfecting with that? So let's let Sheila answer that question.
Ultraviolet light comes in different parts. There's a UVA, a UVB, and a UVC. It's the UVC that kills viruses, and it's actually very, very effective, providing it's strong enough, and it actually gets to all the crevices and surfaces where the virus is. That being said, the only ones that are strong enough and still safe are the ones that they use in hospitals and in big companies and things where they zap an entire room. Hospitals have started using smaller UV disinfectants for some of the masks that they have to keep reusing because we're out of masks. But so we know it works. The problem is that the home ones you can buy on Amazon and all those things, they are not regulated in any way, shape, or form, so I can't tell you that they're going to be a strong enough UVC to kill something. In addition, you have to be really careful because their safety isn't monitored either. And UVC, not only can it give you sunburn and skin cancer, but it can burn your retinas like 10 times faster than looking at the sun.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. And we have Sheila Sund answering your COVID-19 questions on the Emergency Preparedness Net. So we'll pause here and see if anybody else wants to check in.
D7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Steve in Albany.
Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar, Jeff in Albany, and I have a question.
Kilo Delta 5, Golf Oscar Bravo, James in Kaiser.
Kilo Golf 7, Golf Charlie Yankee, this is Lee in South Salem.
Okay, I got three out of the four there. I got Lee, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Charlie Yankee, James, Kilo Delta 5, Golf Oscar Bravo. Right between you two was a real weak station there. But let me also got Jeff, Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar, and Steve, Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike. Oh, I guess there was a fifth person in there. Very weak. Maybe he can try again. Let's see if we can pull him out of the mud here.
WB6SRP.
Okay, there's Whiskey Bravo 6, Sierra Romeo Papa. Ben, here, how are you? Don't have your normal booming voice tonight there, but we got you. Got you checked in there. Okay, let's go back to Jeff here, Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar. You had a question.
Yes, Dr. Sund. I apologize if this has been asked or addressed before. I don't recall, but specifically when it comes to fresh produce in the grocery store, things that we might not cook, lettuce, salad items, tomatoes, fruits, and things that may have been touched by somebody else in the grocery store, what protocol would you recommend for that?
There's no official protocol. I'll give you my recommendations. But again, I do want to say that at least so far, despite looking for it, we're not finding that to be a major source of infection. And in fact, in general, even though we're all being very careful about what we touch, the great majority of infections seem like they are coming more from who you are around and not what you touch. So it doesn't mean I don't want you to clean things, but that's the smaller percentage of it. And food in particular seems to be very low risk. Having said that, what do? I rinse my vegetables really, really well with running water. If it's a smooth skin thing that's easy to wash, I might squirt like an apple or a cucumber. I might put a little squirt of dishwasher soap on it and rub it a little better, particularly because they sometimes feel like things could stick to them. But other than that, I'm not particularly worried about eating my fresh fruits and vegetables without cooking them because the statistical odds of you getting sick from that are tiny, tiny, tiny. You're more likely to get sick from somebody that has been out and caught it and come into your house by far than you would from your food.
Okay, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, your net control for tonight. We're on the emergency preparedness net. We are talking about COVID-19 and answering your questions about this. Okay, there was a last time we did this, which was Friday, they had started talking about the anti-malarial drugs, and I wanted to, Sheila to address, you may have heard some news that said, oh, well, you know, the FDA has approved these anti-malarial drugs, and so that is the case, and I wanted to comment on the anti-malarials, and in spite of that approval, again, the caveats for these drugs, who they're for, and what to worry about.
So the good news, I think, is that they have approved the doctors in hospitals to start being able to test the chloroquine and the hydrochloroquine. They can get it from the manufacturers. They can use it in sick people in the hospital. And in order to do that, they actually have to follow some protocols and write down some data of how it works and what else was going on with the patient. So it kind of makes any doctor in the hospital that wants to try it become a little mini researcher. And hopefully over some time we'll be able to see better from that whether these drugs are really helpful. I also, in my own opinion, from the looking at how they work, I think their greatest benefit will come from the hospital, at least from looking at the science behind how they might work, that if they're helpful, maybe they'll keep some people from getting that extra burst of virus that puts them on a ventilator. As far as using them yourself, that's still not an option. They are going to be tightly controlled so that in the outpatient world, they are limited to the people that need them to treat real diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, and you can't get them, at least in Oregon, for outpatient use, which is a good thing because I know a lot of people with rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, and they've been having a hard time getting those drugs since there was a run on them for people that are just worried about getting sick.
Okay, so anyway, again, those are powerful drugs, and we talked about how they have some big side effects too. They're not innocuous drugs that you want to get from eBay or something like that. So again, we're answering questions about COVID-19. Sheila's been looking a lot at the numbers. She's on some advisory committees with Salem Health and some of the state agencies. So keeps a lot of close track to the numbers, what's going on here. So if you have any questions about that or any other questions, come now, please.
Whiskey 7 Sierra Hotel Mike.
Yes, sir. Steve, go ahead, please.
I've heard that hydrogen peroxide might be effective as a sanitizer against the virus. Is that true?
Okay, she's going to actually double check that real quick because it's not one of the ones that shows up as a recommended thing. And I know one thing about hydrogen peroxide is it is just like the bleach; it has a shelf life, and once the bottle's opened, it becomes less effective. So let's just see. She's going to double check with the EPA thing here and see what it says about peroxide for you. But I will get you that answer in just a few minutes. If so, it would need to be real fresh.
I have not seen anything about it being tested specifically for the COVID-19 germ. It has been used for some microorganisms, but in general, I would be nervous about using it for this one because it hasn't been studied. I tend to really kind of go either for my high alcohol things or for bleach-based things because I know those work really well.
W7 and 18.
Yes, sir. Nate, go ahead.
I've heard that sometimes they use hydrochloroquine and also azithromycin. Is there something special that the azithromycin adds?
Again, these are kind of treatments out of desperation. When you have people as sick as these people are in the hospital, the doctors try anything that might work. Traditionally, with people that were hospitalized with influenza, they had a lot of bacterial secondary infections in their lungs, and that's what azithromycin is. It's not an antiviral, it's an antibacterial. So the people that are using it in COVID are hoping that maybe some of the reason the person looks like they're doing so badly is because they have a secondary bacterial infection. However, that's actually not really being found when we're actually looking at the cases, including the ones that have died. There's not really any evidence that they have bacteria.
Thank you. I understand that doctors are always trying to find out whether it's bacteria or viral. Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to throw out about that is I mentioned before with the chloroquine and the hydroxychloroquine when we talked last week, is that one of the risks of people using them on their own or using them for mild illness is that it can cause a problem with blocking the electrical system of your heart. And interestingly, azithromycin can also do that. So if you use them in combination, you're taking two drugs, that literally could make your heart rhythm stop. And so I guess maybe in the hospital they think they're watching closely enough, but boy, that would make me really nervous.
Cut 7, Bravo, Uniform Victor with a question.
Actually, come again with your call sign, please. There, got a little bit of a, didn't get the whole thing. Come again, please, and your name.
This is Walt Kilo, Foxtrot 7, Bravo, Uniform Victor.
Okay, Walt, go ahead with your question.
When we're sanitizing with bleach in a restaurant setting, there's a certain number we're looking at. I think it's like 50 parts per million. What about for this virus? What number are we looking for there? Over.
There is a specific concentration. I can't recall it off the top of my head, but if you want, I have it written down on a piece of paper, and I will have Brett get that out to you guys later on. You have to look really carefully at the concentration of bleach that you have in your bottle because they do vary a bit when you buy them in the store. They're not all the same concentration. So you have to be able to do some math in your head to figure out how to change it. But I'll give you the most common one, and then you'd have to play with that. The other thing I want to really point out is if you use a bleach solution, is first of all, your bleach is only good for a year since you bought it. Even if it's sat closed, after a year, it's really not strong enough anymore. And your bleach solutions that you use to disinfect have to be mixed up every 24 hours. They lose their potency after 24 hours.
K1VIN, Phil.
We're actually using the testing strips to, so if it's a year in the bottle and it's dead, it's going to be dead on the strip as well.
KG7, GDB here. Can you clarify that the testing strips, basically what she's saying is that, yes, even a brand new bottle of bleach, if it's over a year old, yeah, you should probably, when you buy a bottle of bleach, go ahead and mark the date on it, because after a year, it's not really germicidal anymore. If it's been opened, you will find that it probably doesn't even smell like bleach after a year. I noticed that some of mine I had at home. Wanted to get the clarification. We were talking about testing strips. You're talking about something like would you be used in a pool or something?
No, this is actually a testing strip that is used to measure for sanitizing in restaurant washing.
Okay. Yeah, she's just said she's not aware of those strips. That probably be a good thing if we can figure out what concentration they work on. I know I've we'll just get the concentration for you. There's especially if you wanted to make a quantity. We tend to make small spray bottles with it, and I think I'm using it in the order of
two tablespoons in per two cups, I think is what I was using, but I'll double check that for you. Kevin, you had a comment?
So I watched a doctor's report yesterday on the off-roading forums. He's on the front line also with, he's actually, I don't remember what, he's a ER surgeon. Either way, he's on the front line. And he says it's very specifically 10% alcohol or 10% bleach mixture. The reason why not more, not less, if you do more, then the activation will actually create a film over the actual virus and it won't actually kill it, and less just won't kill it. So that's what I heard from him. If you have something else different, I would run with the 10%. And from what he's saying, don't go more.
From my experience as a food handler licensed by the state of Oregon, 10% is a ginormous dose. And the other thing, you need to mix this with water under 70 degrees. Anything over 70 will kill the bleach itself.
K9 RCP with a comment.
Okay, checking in, Richard, Kilo 9, Romeo, Charlie, Papa. And good information there on the not using the hot water. Our solution that we had, normal household bleach is about 6% per bottle. So again, there's different concentrations of that to begin with. So you couldn't get a 10% solution. You know, that would be straight bleach, right? So mixing it with two tablespoons and two cups of water is one recommendation for making a homemade antiviral solution there. Let's see. Richard, go ahead with your comment.
Okay. So I'm a certified pool operator for a very large body of water here in Newburgh, a public pool. And we actually have to deal with a lot of types of things that can get into the water for people. I won't say what type of stuff, but the nasty stuff. And there's a lot of different types of issues with that. So, yeah, we're required to have certain levels of bleach. And according to the CDC's website, for COVID-19, for hard non-porous surfaces, you want 8,000 parts per million of sodium hypochlorite with it at least 1 minute on time, you know, on the actual surface to do the to deactivate whatever's on there, which is basically 5 tablespoons or a third of a cup of bleach per gallon of water, or 4 teaspoons of bleach per 1 quart of water. Also, hydrogen peroxide at 3% is a perfect disinfectant for COVID-19, as the extra oxygen oxidizes the virus and basically destroys the RNA and the DNA structure for the virus, as it kills a lot of things as well. So you can sterilize things with hydrogen peroxide if you can't use bleach, and then bleach is, just kills everything. 1,000 parts per million kills pretty much anything. Also, with alcohol, the reason why it's 70% instead of, you know, a lot higher is you have to have a wetting property part of the alcohol, and that's where the water comes into play. If it can't break into the cell structure, not really a cell, but into the structure of the virus with water, then it won't, it's like hydrophobic almost. Anyway, back to that. K9 RCP.
RGM comment.
DY with a question after that comment.
Okay, hold on. Let me get Whiskey 7, Romeo Golf, Mike in. Was that Lee that had the comment there?
No, I had a question.
Okay, Lee, hang in there. I'll get Reiner first, Whiskey 7, Romeo Golf, Mike. And by the way, that those concentrations that Richard said, again, I told you 2 tablespoons for 2 cups and 5 tablespoons per gallon, that works out the way the same thing. So Pretty close. Okay, so that's the recommended amount. Go ahead, Reiner.
Well, I actually had a comment towards something Richard said last week. If you guys want to continue with the bleach, I was going to talk about UV for a minute.
Let me just have her make one more comment on the disinfecting, and then we did mention already the UV a little bit, and I'll let you have a comment. And then I got Lee waiting for a question here. But let's finish the disinfectant.
So the CDC site is a very good site with a lot of questions, answers a lot of questions of what you should be using for how to do your bleach, how to use other disinfectants. And I just did a quick Google search, CDC bleach COVID-19, and came up with a great basic page, and then there's another click on there that will give you detailed disinfection guidance if you want. So that looks like, looking at that right away, that's a very good journal person's thing. It talks about trash cans, it talks about food, it talks about all kinds of stuff. So I would recommend that page.
Okay. All right, Reiner, your comment about the UV light.
I don't know what you hit so far this week, so let me get a drip. So UVC is the effective wavelength, according to CDC and some other sites. That's 250 nanometers. I think it's 254 is the peak efficiency, but obviously any light's going to provide a little spectrum in there. Mercury vapor lights actually produce that spectrum of light. The information that I found says that it will effectively degrade the RNA of the virus at 200 joules per meter, which works out to 200 watts for 1 second for 1 meter of area. Now, that's a lot to try to figure out, but what they're also saying is basically if you can use a fairly strong light over a period of 20 minutes to half an hour, you'll pretty much kill everything. I might have timed out there.
Yeah, you timed out, but so we heard so far, yes, so you're talking about the strength of UV light. We had mentioned before UVC, got that, and to, of course, use precautions in where you get the light and that the UV light can also cause sunburns and blindness and other things. So it's not an innocuous thing to be around the light. Now, go ahead with your finish up your comment on the amount of time that you found.
So 20 to 30 minutes is what they were saying was a good target time. It actually takes considerably less, but you're aiming for overkill here. The other issues that come up with it are shadow areas. You have to make sure that the light is hitting the entire area that you're trying to disinfect and that the material is not so porous that it creates shadows inside there. It will penetrate liquids to some extent, and that depends on the amount of time also. So those were the things that I've learned about it. I kind of did a little research jump after Richard talked about that, but it may be a good way for people to disinfect their hot zone areas. And UVC is the least problematic with sunburns and stuff. That is mostly... UVC is the least problematic with the sunburn level, but you should wear eye protection. A and B, and B is apparently is the highest one as far as problems with skin.
K9 RCP with comment.
Yep, go ahead. I think that's what we're seeing here. Again, we mentioned that the eye is very sensitive to it. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, the eyes are very sensitive to it, that you can burn the skin layer of your eyes with it. And I bought in quite a few UVC lights that are perfectly in the realm of to kill this stuff for various reasons. But what I was going to get at is it sounds like Kimmerle, I think it's Reiner, the last person I talked. Sounds like he actually watched the video from Tech Ingredients. There's a YouTube channel on YouTube called Tech Ingredients, and they have about four or five videos now about COVID-19 and how to kill it and just basic stuff. And there's many different ways to kill it, from, you know, bleach, hydrogen peroxides, you know, ozone, UVC. It's a really good video to watch, especially the four or five videos he's done. And he comes from a science background with, you know, having hand sanitizer. It goes really in depth. You guys might want to watch that. Again, it's Tech Ingredients on YouTube is the channel name. So just want to bring that up because there's a lot of good information on there about COVID-19. K9RCP, back to net control.
RGM.
W0EDF.
Okay, I gotta stop you there for just a minute. I think we've talked a lot about the UV stuff, and I actually had Lee had was waiting with a question, and I wanted to make sure we got back to his question. We have about 5 minutes left, but suffice to say, I think we probably answered the question on UV light for now. And let me just find out what Lee has to say. Then we'll come back to Richard, EDF Richard, Lee.
Thank you. If you get or have had a pneumonia shot, would it lessen the effects of the virus if you get it?
Unfortunately, it won't help at all. The pneumonia, it's very specific for a common bacteria that gets causes pneumonia in older people, but it won't do anything for COVID-19. I wish it did be an easy solution.
Correct me if I'm wrong real fast. The main difference is bacteria versus viral, and this is viral, right? K9RCP.
Absolutely, that's correct. That's why it's called coronavirus. It's a different bug there. Let's see. EDF, you had a question or a comment.
Yeah, I want to get back to, we all know that washing our hands is good and not touching our face is good. If we go out of the home and we're in an environment where there might be COVID, what do we bring back on our clothing? What are the alerts that we need to know about when we need to take our clothing off, wash it, and so on, versus when we're okay wearing the same clothing inside our house?
Again, it's all statistical odds. If you are keeping your 6 foot distance from people other than brief passing by, the chance that you have any significant COVID on you is very slim, and you don't need to worry about your clothes. It's not like you're rubbing your hands all over your clothes, and the amount, if you had, would be very small. The exception would be people that are in a high risk area, so like healthcare workers are likely to, in a hospital, might very well have a significant amount of COVID on them, and they shouldn't wear their clothes inside. If you are stuck in an essential job where there's a lot of you crammed in a small space, I would be more worried about your clothes. But in general, the amount of COVID that you're going to get in a store environment or anything like that, as long as you're keeping your 6 foot distance, it's really a very small amount. And again, I really want to emphasize, because we're going to be doing this for a while, is it is important to do your cleaning and disinfecting, but at the same time, we are now finding, as we learn more and more about this virus, that the great majority of infections are not coming from things that people touch, even though that's what we pushed so strongly. The great majority of infections are coming from the people we have been in close contact with. So I want people to still clean and things, but if you are staying at home and socially distancing other than a once-in-a-while trip to the store where you keep 6 feet, your risk of getting infected is extremely, extremely low. Adding disinfection makes it even better, but you, as time goes on, that is something to relax more about, because the biggest thing that you've done is if you stay away from people, you've cut out probably 90% of your chance of getting sick.
RGM with a comment before we end.
Yeah, go ahead, Reiner.
Yeah, Richard alluded to tech ingredients, YouTube. I do watch a lot of YouTubes, and I did watch his, but I think it's really important that people go and actually research this stuff beyond what people are saying on the web and YouTube. I've been using the NCBI website, which is part of the National Institute of Health, in the U.S. Library of Medicine, et cetera, and CDC site, and Johns Hopkins, and a few other places that I would consider much more reliable to. So when you find this, hear this information, go and look it up. Don't just take their word for it. It's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, very good advice there. And I'll give you an example of that. Yesterday we heard a report that said the CDC was recommending everyone wears masks. That was what someone said, okay? And there were some Urban Spiracle paper articles that said that. And that, if you boil down to it, it actually didn't say that. And then it said, oh, the health official in Washington recommended people wear masks. Well, the official recommendation from the state of Washington is that we follow CDC guidelines, which sets out the guidelines for healthcare workers and people who are infected to wear masks, not the general public, okay? And what the guy actually said is, I don't see that there's any harm in people wearing a homemade mask if it fits well. That's what he said. That's different than saying, I recommend it, right? I don't see any harm in it. It's different than I recommend it, or it's a recommendation. So just, yeah, be really careful of the wording that the media puts in things. Try to go right to the source if you can. And we have to follow official sites, you know, that they're looking at a bigger picture, and, you know, that's the best we can do. If you want to go, if you're science-oriented and you want to go read the actual articles, those are all available now. They're free access to those kinds of things. So look up the journal articles they're talking about. Are there any final questions before we go? Because we're just about out of time tonight here.
W7NAT, just me.
W0EDF.
Okay, so I got Nate in there, Whiskey 7, November Alpha Tango. You're on there. I've got Richard, EDF, and maybe a third person who doubled.
WA7HSB.
Could you come back again? Because you have a little with a phonetics for me there, please. Get a little bit of a hiss on your signal.
Hotel Sierra Bravo, here.
Okay, Hotel Sierra Bravo. All right. Let's see. You are second, I guess, behind Nate and Richard. Okay, so, Nate, go ahead.
Yes, I understand that you should keep 6 feet away from other people, and I understand that even worse is with their coughing at you, that can be even worse. So if they're not coughing and you're 6 feet away, I assume that the real problem is when somebody else has this virus, but they're not coughing and they don't have a mask or anything like that on there. That's why you have to watch the 6 feet rule.
That's exactly it, is we don't know who's infected. I can tell you, again, although we're not testing widely in Oregon, there are some pretty good predictors from the number of people we have in the hospital and the number of cases that are showing up. So in Oregon, we probably are still under 10,000 cases of people in the entire state. So your odds of coming across one of them when you're walking out there is pretty slim. And if all you do is walk, you know, 5 feet away from them and pass through them, the chances of you inhaling a virus is very slim. So we don't worry about that very much as long as you're keeping that distance. Now, if you were to bring that person home to your house and sit in your living room and have a cup of tea for an hour where you would be sharing a closed space and exchanging air with them up close, then I would start to worry that you could be breathing in their virus even though neither of you knew they were sick. So that's why we're all sheltering at home, is so that we don't spend any prolonged period of time with somebody that might have it.
Okay, let's see. Good. That was a good question. Let's see. And we had, let's see, Hotel Sierra Bravo. Go ahead.
Yes, Gary here. One more question for Dr. Sun. Concerning blood treatment for people with COVID, I know in years past they've had, again, sorry, going back to the ultraviolet, but there's ultraviolet blood treatment that's been done. Is that anything that's going on now where they remove some blood and run it through a UV machine and then inject it back in the person with?
I think what you're talking about is using blood of people that have been infected and recovered from it. There are a few small studies that are going on right now of that, based upon a few doctors that did it just for just kind of out of desperation. The theory is that if somebody was infected and then improved, that they would have antibodies against it. That's why they got better. And so that if you took their plasma, which is their blood without the red blood cells, and if you took that, it would have these antibodies against the COVID that you could give to somebody else that then might in turn help them fight it. It's a very tricky treatment. It has a lot of risks, similar to blood transfusions, but it is starting to be studied as maybe a way of saving lives of some of the sickest people.
No, this is not what I was talking about. What I had done myself in years past was an older treatment where they removed 50 cc's of blood from your body, oxygenate it, and then drip it back into you through a UV machine. So you're bringing your own blood back into you that's been through the UV light.
I'm not familiar with that treatment, but I don't think that it would work because this is not a virus that lives in your blood. The problem with this virus is that it likes to go live in your lungs and destroys lungs. So even if you were able to irradiate and kill the virus in the bloodstream, it wouldn't be very effective. I think that's what the theory behind that would be, but I've never actually seen anything on that, so I'm just theorizing.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, there was one other question. Was it Richard, EDF?
Yeah, thank you, Brett. This is the nets that you guys have been doing are wonderful for me, and I think a lot of us are in the vulnerable population. When do you plan on doing this next? Are you going to do it Friday, next Tuesday? I want to put that in my calendar and make sure I can attend.
I'm hoping to do it on Fridays and Tuesdays with one caveat, and that's that I've become a lot more involved in the last 2 days at helping the actual healthcare system gear up in Salem. So I think by evenings I will not be doing that and should be available to do the net, but I was actually talking to somebody at the Oregon Health Association about that until literally 20 minutes before this talk. So I'm hoping to be here on Friday, but I reserve the right to have to pull out at the last minute if I'm involved in something for healthcare preparation.
Okay, so thank you for, I'm going to go ahead and close the net tonight. So we'll try to get back on Friday and answer more questions. The great questions tonight for everyone. And let's see. She wanted to mention a little bit about her blog again, disasterdoc.net. Let's let her give a little bit on that.
Yeah, I haven't posted anything for about 5 days now because I get about 2/3 way through an article and then I get called away to do something else or go to a conference call. So I don't know how often I will be posting. I will tell you about it if I post again on before next Friday. I hope to, because there's a couple topics we haven't talked about that I think would be helpful to share with you. It's just going to see how life goes over the next few days.
K7MTV.
Yeah, that's Mike. MJB got you checked in. quick, yeah, just quick, you check in there, Mike. I'm trying to shut it down, but we can take your comment after the net's closed.
Okay, because I'm a little upset at the reporting of all this, so that's my comment. And I can tell you how in detail.
Okay, well, let's just close it down, and then I'll see if I can get the question here. But I don't want to keep people there. Anyway, this is again, the time is now 8:10 p.m. We're a little bit late here. This concludes our 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. This net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. And our thanks go out to Dan WA7 for the use of the repeater. Thank you to Sheila Sund, MD, who's our guest speaker for all things related to the COVID-19 pandemic. And thank you to everyone who participated tonight. We had great questions, and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf, Delta Bravo. I'm going to close the net sort of formally now at 8:11, and we can return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. Of course, you can continue undirected. Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. I'll be clear.